morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, I will explain why these things are happening and what it means to you. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through His Torah, which means teaching and not law, and by way of His one and only covenant. If you are rational, I promise this will be the best part of today's program. Our phone number, should you want to engage in this discussion, if you want to question, criticize, or affirm something I have to say, is 877-300-7645. Scott, my producer and I were talking before the program began this morning of the Republican National Convention and all the interruptions that it's had with the hurricane. And the images that, of course, are being shown on TV, the Republican National Convention, is everybody bowed in prayer. We're just laughing. They go, what on earth are they praying for? Are they praying for the storm to go away, as if they think that that God manipulates the forces of nature so that He directs and makes storms? I mean, we call them acts of God. So does He think that God hangs out there in the off the shore of northern Africa to build all these storms? You know, are they saying that, oh God, you know, help us elect this this godly man president when he's a Mormon? I mean, he's part of one of the most ridiculous, corrupt religions on earth.
Oh, God needs to have a hobby. I mean, right?
Interfering in free will—that's going to be his hobby, huh?
Football and storms, man.
Football and storms. Yeah, touchdowns and tornadoes is going to be God's hobby. You know, he's bowled a 300 game in tornadoes because he always seems to strike trailer parks. Yeah, it's just so pathetic how religious people view their God, as if the very God who said, I want you to walk away from your country, I want you to disengage in the corruptive nature of religion and politics, and they go to a political event and pray for his involvement in that political event. He told you not to do that. He says, I don't want any part of it, and I don't want any part of anybody who focuses on these things. You aren't going to be part of my family, and yet, ignoring what he actually said, they're praying for his involvement and support of something he's told you not to support. It is so utterly absurd. And beyond all of that, there's a aspect to Christian prayer that is especially annoying, and particularly public prayer. I mean, beyond the fact that they've got it wrong, they've all got their little heads bowed, which is the opposite of what God wants. He wants you looking up to Him. He wants you observing what it is that He is offering us, not eyes closed and bowing down. It's the antithesis of what God's trying to create. But it's as if they think that that God is interested in listening to them, as opposed to them realizing that we ought to be interested in listening to God. Yes, Scott.
I was also going to say there's not many Christian prayers that don't start out with our Lord.
and end with, in God's name, Amen.
Yeah.
Amen is the name of the Egyptian sun god, Amen-Ra. And Lord is the title for Satan. It's the title that God specifically says that He despises, and upon His return, the first thing that He tells us that brings Him joy on His return is He'll never have to hear that title, the Lord, ever again. Christian prayer is usually for the very things that God said don't associate with, and it is the inverse of what God encouraged us to do, which is to listen to Him by reciting His Torah teaching and then responding to what He is offering. As opposed, Christians have this whole laundry list, all of which typically violates God's instructions. That said, I'd like to return to and conclude the story that we've been on the last couple of days. We've been talking about the fact that in the first 9 years of what was a suicidal involvement in Afghanistan, where where it was eminently knowable and predictable that Afghanistan would turn out like Vietnam and that it would be counterproductive, that we ought not have invaded that country, that we invaded based upon lies, and that we would not be able to tell the good guys from the bad guys, and there would be almost no good guys there at all, and that the very agenda that we would establish in Afghanistan would be for naught. It would be impossible to achieve. That whole episode in Afghanistan, where we would sacrifice blood and coin, making a bad situation worse, was the article that we were following, because the current president of the United States did something that was, I think, even more morally reprehensible than did his predecessor. George W. Bush engaged American troops in Afghanistan, a war that could never be won, based upon a series of lies. That was grotesquely immoral. And so for the first 1,000 Americans who lost their lives there, and for all 6,000, 7,000 Americans who lost their lives in Iraq, for the 900,000 innocent civilians who lost their lives in these two countries, the blood of that morally corrupt decision is on him. But then Barack Hussein Obama, after announcing that he was going to get us out of these wars, made a moral decision an immoral decision that I think was far worse, knowing full well by this time that the war in Afghanistan was not winnable, that we had a 0% possibility, or even our military admitted it in internal documents, that we had no chance whatsoever to win this war. Winning was not an option. We could stay there for 100 years, we could send 100 million troops, and we could not win. That Afghanistan was going to be worse when we left than what it was when we found it. It was for certain, and we knew it. And at that time, he decides to increase America's military presence and put American servicemen directly in harm's way. He wasn't going to just create a surge where the added Americans stayed most of the time in their forts, somewhat protected. No, he was going to put them out, open and vulnerable, walking in the streets of the very towns and villages where he knew they would be killed, and they have been killed. In the first 9 years of the Afghanistan war, we lost 1,000 Americans. We brought 10,000 home, mutilated in addition to that. But in the last 2 years, under Obama's watch, we've now lost another 1,000 men after we knew this war was not winnable, and had another 20,000 come home, bodies mutilated. This is the conclusion of that article. It reads that Mrs. Schumacher, she is the mother of one of those most recent boys to die in Afghanistan, had begged her son to defer enlisting until after the war ended. But he refused. She urged him to take a job with the Presidential Security Detail. He again said no, determined to be an infantryman and to go to war. It's sad that that this mother would encourage her son to take a job with a Presidential Security Detail, because it says that she does not recognize that it is the president who is responsible for her son's death and for the deaths of 1,000 Americans. He made a decision for his own political ambition that was worth sacrificing her son and 1,000 other sons and daughters.
Which was also against what he actually ran on when he got elected. He said he would end the war.
Yes, the fact that he lied is serious, and that is a absolute legitimate concern regarding this president, which means that he's lying now since he was willing to lie then. But there's a lying is bad. I'll grant you that. Lying is bad. All politicians lie. Lying is bad. All politicians are bad. But that does not compare to premeditated murder. When this man sent the surge into Afghanistan and told them they would be dismounted and walk through the villages that were still occupied by the Taliban, He knew that they would be killed. He knew they would be killed in increasing quantity. And he knew there was nothing that could be gained apart from his image as commander-in-chief being somehow polished by them going there. That's murder. That's a far worse offense. You know, I understand that bad is bad, but there are darker shades of bad. And yet, this woman wanted her son to serve and protect this very man who murdered her son. There is a sad consequence of patriotism, and that is that people make the decision that they want to go to war. You know, when America's president and its lead banker made the decision that the Lusitania should be sailed with civilians on board, should be a military target, should be slowed and made a patsy so that it could be sunk by the Germans, so that America would feel patriotism and want to go to war to protect the assets of a banker, which is how we got involved in World War I. When the truth came out, America should say, we ought not be patriotic. When the Maine was sunk and we blamed it on a foe so that we would rally around the flag and Americans would want to go to war, and that turned out to be untrue, it should have triggered Americans to stop being patriotic and stop sacrificing their sons and daughters in this way. When we found out the Gulf of Tonkin incident was not true, when we found out and sacrificed 65,000 of our sons and daughters in a windless war, when the truth came out, we ought to have used that as a trigger to cease being patriotic so that Mrs. Schumacher's son wouldn't want to become an infantryman and go off to war, as had those deceived in the past. When it was proven that George W. Bush lied when he talked about the smoking gun in the State of the Union address that would cause us to invade Iraq, and so many Americans died, and the truth came out, why wasn't that a trigger for Americans to realize we ought not be patriotic? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Back to our program after the break.
On the air.
Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were talking about how this mother begged her son to defer enlisting so that he could protect the President of the United States, who was responsible for his son's murder. But he was determined to go to war. This is the next line, which affirms what I have been sharing with you, which is that patriotism is akin to religion. It is the religion of politics. And people respond patriotically to the same kind of indoctrination, the same kind of lies, the same kind of deceptions that they respond to religiously. In fact, for most, it's impossible to separate patriotism, politics, and religion. They are all intertwined. They create a mythological view of the world. This is a quote from Mrs. Schumacher. Boy, did my heart sink, she recalled. But I was also proud of him for following his true desires. I was also proud of him for following his true desires. Ma'am, your son is dead because he was deceived by patriotism, because he was deceived by the President of the United States. Because you did not raise him so that he would embrace the truth. You did not share the covenant with him so that he would know that he is to disengage from patriotism and militarism, religion, and from politics. I'm sorry, that sounds harsh. Her son is dead. Her son chose that fate. And he chose it because as parents, Mrs. Schumacher, and if there is a Mr. Schumacher, didn't do the job that God had asked them to do. It's one of the most repeated instructions in God's book of instructions called the Torah. He encourages us as parents to raise our children in such a way that they come to know and understand him and his covenant so that they don't make decisions like this. But here, showing that she was proud of him, patriotism, following his true desires, patriotism. As a parent, you just suck it up. You hold your heart and take a deep breath and hope all goes well. No, that really isn't the appropriate parenting technique. The appropriate parenting technique is to come to know Yahweh as he revealed himself, to come to understand the terms and conditions of his covenant, and to raise your sons and daughters so that they are properly informed, so that they are introduced to Yahweh, and so that they are well acquainted with the terms and conditions of his covenant. And you hope then that they will choose of their own volition to respond rationally to what God is offering. The only antidote for patriotism, for politics, for religion, is Yah's Torah. Apart from it, these things are far too beguiling. They're far too popular for the average person to step away from, to disengage from. The article continues, in late August 2010, Corporal Drew, Lance Corporal Drew, proposed to his girlfriend. Then he was deployed a month later. Within weeks of arriving in Helmand, he died, and three other Marines in a powerful IED blast. At age 20, he became the 1,259th American to die in the war. Inside his coffin, his fiancée placed a photograph of herself wearing her wedding gown. He lost his life for nothing. In fact, it's worse than that. Let's be honest. We've made Afghanistan worse, not better. We've made America not more vulnerable, not more free. When we push the most fundamentalist Muslims out of Afghanistan into Pakistan, which has nuclear weapons, that is precisely what we did. And our two wars in Afghanistan have caused millions of Afghanis to die. It is extraordinarily sad. Staff Sergeant Scott Dickerson was coming home early. He was originally scheduled to return, only to remain in Helmand until November of 2012. But then the Pentagon was pulling Marines out of Afghanistan quickly, looking to get the surge forces out of the country by the fall and shrink the American footprint to about 70,000. You know, when you talk about bringing Marines out, at 70,000, there'll still be more U.S. troops in Afghanistan 4 years into Obama's administration than there were when he took office. He would be home in Hawaii within 2 weeks, he told his father early this month. Not long after that conversation, his father, John Dickerson, saw an article about his soldier who had just died a week before he was to come home. I thought, he's not safe until he sets foot in Hawaii. No, he's not safe. He died. That's right. Sergeant Dickerson, 29, a supply soldier, had volunteered to help train Afghan forces, the very forces who murdered him. This is Yada. This is program is Shattering Myths. We'll return after the break. We were just considering the reality that Sergeant Dickerson, who had volunteered, he was 29 years old, volunteered, as had Lance Corporal Buckley, to train the Afghani army, that they were killed 5 minutes after they gave the Afghani army member a gun, American gun, with American bullets. The Afghani soldiers turned it on these two Americans and then killed them. Now, the Pentagon asserts, I'm going to read this, and this is really unbelievable. The Pentagon asserts that most of those attacks have been the result of personal grudges. So it is Sergeant Dickerson's and Lance Corporal Buckley's fault that they were killed, because according to the Pentagon, they had a personal grudge with the person that they handed a loaded weapon to. P.S. Scott,
I was going to say that you condemned Obama for having for murdering these people, but this is the condemnation on the entire like House of Representatives, Senate, everything, because they all did it. They're all still doing it.
Yes.
So, I mean, Obama's just the face to us. He's the one lying to us. But it's a combination on our entire government.
I would agree. In fact, I would even go one step further. What you have done is you've expanded the net of blame to include Congress. But who sent them there? Who authorized them? Who empowered them?
Well, it comes back to all of us. I mean, has to. It's a democracy. We choose them. So everybody that dies, that's on all of us.
Because we chose to send those men to Washington, and they chose to do this grotesquely immoral thing. And they ended up killing Americans and Afghanis, making a bad situation worse. So who is to blame? We are to blame. What's the purpose of this program in terms of shattering myths? Is to try to awaken enough listeners that we can make a difference, that we can be accountable, that we shed our ignorance, that we shed our propaganda, that we cease to be patriotic and political and religious, so we can view the world accurately, reasonably, rationally, and not be part of this horrible cycle. So here's the U.S. Pentagon, who sent these men into harm's way based on a lie, who has lied to us all the way along. And when these two trainers of the Afghan forces were killed, when they were murdered, it blamed them. It says the Pentagon asserts that most of these attacks have been the result of personal grudges. No. They're the result of the fact that we went in and lashed out at a symptom. The problem is Islam. The reason that the Afghani soldiers shot and killed the Americans who were providing them with the weapons is because that is what is demanded by their religion. It is what the Quran says. It's what the Hadith preaches. It is what Muhammad did. And so long as we are unwilling to acknowledge the truth about this situation, so long as we are willing to be ignorant of Islam and wave the flag instead, then our government will continue to lie to us, and we will continue to lose the lives of our sons and daughters.
That statement by the Pentagon makes them the absolute worst teammates ever.
Oh, yeah, this whole idea, like, we never leave a Marine behind, all for one for all. And here's the Pentagon distancing itself from these men. So, you know, when those poor guys were ordered to call to burn the trash in Afghanistan, and part of the trash they were ordered to burn included a box of unused Qurans. You know that the military is punishing those men and women who followed the orders to do exactly what they were told to do, abandoning them, punishing them to save face.
What they're saying is that it's a personal grudge between, so somebody has a grudge against them. Well, technically that American soldier is supposed to be on the Pentagon's side. So,
right.
Like, even in, like, I always think of, like, football here.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I'm not the one out on the field talking trash and taking cheap shots, the second somebody cheap shots my teammate, I'll probably go over there and, you know, push the guy away and, you know, like,
right.
Hey, what are you doing? You know?
Defend your guy.
Defend my guy, you know.
Here they're surrendering their guy and saying it's their guy's fault that he got killed.
Yeah. You know, somebody cheap shots my quarterback and I'm just supposed to go, hey, that's a great, you know, good hit. You know, you deserve that, you know, you deserve that personal grudge.
Well, somebody did. It was called the New Orleans Saints. They cheap shotted your quarterback. I think his name was Brett Favre and ended up winning a Super Bowl.
Favre is not my quarterback.
He was.
No.
Okay. Scott is a Minnesota Viking fan.
I hate Brett Favre.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Well, Brett Favre did have a little moral meltdown towards the end of his career.
Brett Favre is a Packer.
But that's right. So as a Minnesota Viking true fan, you would be a Packer fan. I don't know why we are digressing. We were actually talking about something quite serious here. But, you know, sometimes humor is the only way out. And what are you going to do when your government sends its sons and daughters in to fight based upon a lie, making a bad situation worse, and then disowns them in the process? Perhaps laughing is the best medicine here. The reality is, of course, that they, those who shot these boys were fundamentalist Muslims. They are Taliban members because the Taliban is an expression of fundamentalist Islam. The article goes on to say, Scott, this is amazing, that the attacks have also raised anew concerns about the integrity of the Afghan forces that NATO expects to secure the entire nation after they withdraw. It's like Vietnam. Remember, we spent all that time and money equipping the Vietnamese to fight the war that we didn't want to fight anymore because we recognized the war couldn't be won. And how did they do?
Spectacularly.
Oh yeah, yeah. If you call flame out, go out in flames. Spectacular. Yeah, they did. Right. Same thing is true here. All we're doing is we're arming the future enemy of Israel, because when we leave, the Taliban will collect all of these weapons and they will join in the Magog Federation and they're going to attack Israel en masse and we will have provided the weapons. Congratulations, America.
I think part of the problem here is that is. You brought it up. Nobody in our military is forced to join the military. So therefore, you really gotta rely on your parents to, you know, make sure that the kid understands what they're doing. And
right.
And that's where you gotta start.
I mean, yeah, in fact, this next line right here in the article speaks directly to that the families who are sending their sons and daughters over to a windless war where they end up dying and becoming mutilated can't answer this question. They're still asking this question, which I think speaks to your point, Scott. It says, more fundamentally, the continued deaths occurring even as American forces are conducting fewer combat missions have prompted service members and military families to wonder, has the decade-long American presence in Afghanistan made a difference? How could you be wondering that? How could you not have figured that out by this time? That we've not only accomplished nothing, we've been counterproductive. How could you not figure it out by this time that America lied to get into this war? That it's lied to stay in the war? How could you not figure it out?
They buy into the propaganda. There's a great propaganda machine that America has had since before you or I were born.
Yeah, I think it actually began in earnest with the Spanish-American War. The propaganda associated with the sinking of the Maine began the flag waving, and you know it continued, and it has continued unabated, one lie after another, motivating Americans to think that they're out to win wars, and we are the mighty warrior nation that wins wars.
Well, what makes it even worse is that if you try and question, you know, the reasons why we're doing this or should
yes.
we be doing this, it's not met with any sort of rationality. It's
no.
immediately met with, what are you doing? Are you unpatriotic? Why don't you get out of this country?
Yeah,
just because I'm questioning something my country does. Technically, I'm being a responsible person by doing that.
When I began to talk about Afghanistan and Iraq, which was 11 years ago, in the fall of 2001, and was vehement about the idea that we had no chance to win this. This is exactly, told people exactly what was going to occur, and it occurred exactly as I said it would. And what I was told was, you know, that first we had to do something. We couldn't just do nothing, and which has to be the most irrational conclusion in the world. Because doing the wrong thing is always worse than doing nothing. And just because you don't do the wrong thing doesn't preclude you from doing the right thing. And there were right things we could have done. But also that this notion that once we are at war, that there is no longer a reason to debate. You can no longer debate why we're at war. When we're at war, we just must support our troops and our president. As opposed to say, no, we ought not be here. Leave. Leave now. Just think if we had left both of those two wars within a week of the time we invaded.
Well, and we also talked about this yesterday, is to attack somebody on their own soil is nearly impossible unless you're going to go to astronomical levels, you know?
Right.
You have to be absolutely blood-crazed in order to defeat people on their own soil when you don't know
right.
who your enemy is,
right.
Where, how they're getting their weapons. A lot of times you're giving them the weapons. So.
Even if you know who your enemy is, defeating them on their own soil
exactly.
is impossible without catastrophic means. For example, Civil War. Sherman, the only reason that they ultimately prevailed is Sherman became a terrorist. He made war so horrible for the South could not fight it anymore. In the Pacific theater of World War II and in Europe, we firebombed, using terrorist tactics, German and Japanese cities, roasting women and children alive until there was just no way to fight that war anymore. You know, we dropped napalm and Agent Orange all over Vietnam. Our strategy has been to make it intolerable to fight, but the consequences of that are so grievous that no one in their right mind should do it. Segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. We ended with a question. Has the decade-long American presence in Afghanistan made a difference? Well, they're back into the poppy business, so Europe is awash in heroin again. Lots of little girls have had acid thrown in their faces. Between the two wars in Afghanistan that America has sponsored, a couple of million Afghanis are dead. Some 2,000 Americans have lost their lives. We squandered $1 trillion. So, yeah, I would say that that's made a difference. And, of course, the fundamentalist Muslims in Afghanistan have gone into Pakistan and have destabilized a nation with atomic weapons. That's all made a difference. Is that a good difference? No.
Yeah, I was just going to say, has it made a good difference? Has anybody benefited from this?
Oh, yeah, the Karzai family has benefited tremendously. They went into it as low-level attachés for the Taliban and consultants for American oil companies, and now the Karzai family are worth billions of dollars. So have the Karzais benefited? Yes, as their benefit, of course, will be short-lived if they stay in Afghanistan, which I doubt they will. My guess is that the moment that American troops leave, they will hightail it out of Afghanistan with their billions of dollars. So, yeah, there's been some benefits. The U.S. Pentagon has had trillions of dollars squandered on it. And there's some people that just love war. Sadly, all too many of those who volunteer love war. They want to go to war. And yet, this we read from the article, despite his son's death, Mr. Dickerson, whose son was among the last to die, killed by one that he was training, says that he's not sure. He's still not sure whether America's involvement has made a difference. Then he says he was the most lovable, caring human being. That's right. You want to go off to war. You know, we fly bombers, they bomb. We fly fighters, they fight. We shoot guns, they kill. He wanted to go off to war, but from the father's point of view, I guess you can't blame the father. He was lovable and he was caring, which is why he wanted to go off to war. Why can't we put these things together? Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Yes, that's what they say when the B-1 bomber flies over the sporting event, over the parade, when the F-14s fly in formation. Oh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. No, they're there to kill. We made them to destroy. He wanted to join the Marines ever since 9/11. You know, we rally patriotically young men to want to go to fight for their country based upon lies, despite the many attempts to dissuade him. By the time he was in high school, a Marine Corps flag hung in his bedroom. That was what he swore his allegiance to. That is what he placed his faith in. That is what he desired. I say, why the Marines? His mom would ask, and he would reply, I can pick up lots of chicks with that uniform. Oh, yeah, it's a snappy-looking uniform. Bet it looked great in his coffin. He never felt secure living alongside the Afghans, as she said, so then why were we there? This is the mom's quote. If they want to kill themselves, let them, she said of the Afghan people. But they are killing people they shouldn't, that shouldn't be killed, who have lives here and families here and brothers and sisters here. Then why, mom, did you send him there? Why, Mr. President, did you send him there? Why did you send him before people who wanted to kill him? Why did you equip those with weapons and bullets and guns who were committed to killing him? Why, Mr. President?
And why aren't we holding people accountable?
We don't do that because of patriotism. That's the reason. To say what we have said on this program is unpatriotic, and Americans are very reluctant to say anything which is deemed as being unpatriotic. And so most Americans will deceive their own children. They will deceive themselves. They will salute the flag. They will respect the office of president, all because to tell the truth, to know the truth, puts someone in a position where they are opposing the popular view, where they will now be subject to slander and ridicule. And so most go along. But there's a consequence of going along, and it puts us in situations where this young boy was killed by the very people he was there to protect. Why, indeed? What did we gain? And what did we lose? Answer that question, and you will know why it is not appropriate to be patriotic. Back in a moment.
Hi, folks. This is Pastor Butch Paul. Please allow me to share some very exciting and important health news with you. I've been struggling with type 2 diabetes for about 15 years.